Good evening and welcome to the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Norma Walden, chair of the club's International Relations Forum. We also welcome our radio listeners, and we invite our audience to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. It is my pleasure and honor to introduce His Excellency André Azoulay, presently senior advisor to His Majesty King Mohammed VI of Morocco. Mr. Azoulay was born in Morocco and educated in Paris, where he studied economics, journalism, and international relations. I'd say an ideal combination for his later life. He had a long career with the Paribas Bank in Paris as executive vice president of Middle East and North Africa regions, as well as head of the bank's public affairs department. In his current position, he has had the opportunity to implement economic reforms in Morocco. Mr. Azoulay is an ardent ambassador of Morocco and has been instrumental in improving relations with the European Union and the U.S. He is a strong advocate for peace and dialogue between the Arab Muslim world and Jewish communities worldwide. For over 30 years, he has actively supported mutual respect between Islam and the Western world. He is known for contributions to the Middle East peace process and interfaith cross-cultural initiatives. Please welcome His Excellency André Azoulay to tell us about reform in Morocco, evolution, not revolution.
Good evening, and thank you, madam. Thank you for having me this evening with you, and I want first to express my deep gratitude to give me this chance to speak about my country this evening and to share with you some thoughts about what does it mean to be Moroccan by our time. But I will first refer to history. Kamel, you mentioned that we effectively were the first country to recognize United States of America. But we were first in so many things when we consider this part of the world. And first of all, something which is very dear to my heart. I'm sure that in this room nobody knows that the first Jewish person elected in your country with the first American Senate was a Moroccan and a Moroccan Jew. And he was also from my hometown, Essaouira, Mogador, David Yuli Levy. And I'm always, very upset by the fact that the only place in the world where you can find this story, part of your own heritage and part of my heritage too, is Miami, Florida, because David Yuli Levy was elected in Florida first. And his father, who immigrated from Essaouira, was also the very first person writing and publishing a book to call for the end of slavery in this country. And I'm saying that because it mirrors, what was the mood in Morocco at that time? Which modernity, which humanity was, so present in Morocco and in Essaouira too? I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of that because it is history, but it is also part of, very daily life by our time. President Clinton was in Rabat just 2 days ago, and after meeting His Majesty, because he was in Morocco just to as a guest for the opening of the new international university in Casablanca. And after meeting His Majesty Mohammed VI, he said that he is familiar, very familiar with Morocco, but he wants again to share with the people who were listening to him how unique is my country. And he was referring to a very recent event, and sorry to speak maybe too much about Judaism in Morocco, but it was the news. He was referring to the opening just 2 weeks ago of a new synagogue, an old synagogue in Fez, which was just restored. And I was presiding also with the Moroccan Prime Minister, by the way, the leader of one of the Islamist parties in Morocco. We were together to preside the opening of Slat el-Fasiyin, which is one of the oldest synagogue in Fez. That, again, made Morocco maybe unique, but definitely different. And to finish on this chapter, I'm advising my king, Mohammed VI. I was advising his father, late King Hassan II. And the king of Morocco is the commander of the Islamic faith. And he is a direct descendant of the Prophet Muhammad. And I am Jewish myself. Moroccan Jew. I am usually saying that I'm more than 3,000 years old. Because as a member of my community, I can say that we Jews arrived in Morocco close to 1,000 years before Islam and before the Arab world. So I feel totally relaxed when I said I am a Moroccan citizen and I am Jewish. By the way, I'm so proud of my country because it gives me this advantage and this privilege to share with you the fact that if I am Jewish, I am also a Berber. I am also an Arab. I am an Arabo-Berber Jewish person. And I was probably, maybe I'm also a little Muslim because, you know, having been with Islam close to 1,000 years, maybe something happened on the road. So I'm saying that because, again, by our time, when we have regression everywhere around, when we have archaism everywhere around, where we have to meet and to organize forums, conferences, to call on the United Nations, to call on so many organizations in the world, just to see or to consider if it is still possible to live together being Muslim, Jewish, or Christian. It's such a regression. It's shameful, in fact. And I have always fought against this accelerate theory of the so-called clash of religion, clash of civilization, or clash of culture. It didn't exist. Our religions are abused, are instrumentalized, are used as alibis when it comes to give a real answer to political issues. Some people, some leaders, some organization worldwide, and it exists in Judaism, it exists in Islam, and it exists in Christianity. Those persons want or pretend to want giving a religious answer to political issues. Just to avoid the real answer, you know, said, well, if something happened in this country, it's because of religion and because of Islam. If something happens, it's because of Judaism, because of Jews. It's a shame. Religion has nothing to do with that. Religion is more to make us together, sharing the same values, we are all sons of Abraham, and we don't have to let anyone use this fraternity to make us in a position of confrontation or of a break. But again, in Morocco, we are in a different vision, in different rhetoric, in a different logic. And we resist the temptation to, again, like it happens unfortunately in so many countries, to stigmatize anyone because of its culture or its face. And we are not doing it to please anyone. We are not doing it to give me the possibility, you know, to present my country as a unique country this evening. No, in fact, it's so deeply rooted in the Moroccan civilization, because we are a civilization. We are not a newborn country. As I said, 3,000 years, it's not yesterday. But this heritage, this legacy, is needed by all of us today more than ever. It's needed in so many, areas and reasons, because of so many reasons. Because, as I said in the beginning, we are at risk. We are at risk when we said that there is no clash of religion. Because, if you open your daily newspaper or if you watch your program at your TV and you heard about the Arab world or Islam by today, it's always in a negative situation. Who could tell us that referring to Islam, it's also a happy story, a successful story. It's also modernity. It's also humanity. And that's why, again, the Moroccan difference today, when we have all around what is called the Arab Awakening, and we have, when you have such a deep, strong, radical change in the whole region, in fact, if you refer to the situation in Egypt or in Syria or in Libya, Tunisia, today has nothing to do with what the situation just 2 or 3 years ago. History is knocking our doors, not only in the region, but it's also knocking your doors, because what is going on in my region will impact, and is impacting, in fact, your situation and the situation in your country. It's something which has no more any barrier, any frontier. We are all concerned by the same realities. We have also globalization in this kind of rhetoric and logic. It's not just economy, and it's not just politics. It's also culture, globalized. It's also religion, abused by this negative globalization. So we have to resist, we have to oppose, and we have to give or to design a different perspective. And by doing it based on the Moroccan realities, it is rooted again, as I said, in history, but also in the current situation, and it gives such a deep legitimacy, because we are also, as an Arab country, as a Muslim country, as part of the Middle East, as part of North Africa, we are also changing. Every day we are reforming something. Every day we are trying to regenerate or to think how to improve situation, our situation. The difference with the rest of the region is in my country there is no break. There is no revolution. We are in the dynamic of reform permanently. You know, I'm in the Guinness Book because I'm in this position of advisor of His Majesty for 22 years. And I am maybe the oldest. I have also the privilege to have been with two kings, which is very rare in history, not only in Morocco, but in many monarchies. And it gives me the advantage to tell you that I don't remember 1 year during those 20 years that we didn't change something on the economic field, on institution, or on social and culture. And let me just remind you, please, madam, tell me where I have to stop and to give a chance to have also a discussion with all of you. But let me remind you that if Morocco is today in a different situation than our neighbors, and if we have the ability, the capacity to change and to reform without, you know, being in the logic of confrontation or revolution or violence, it's not by miracle. And there is no magic stick to explain it. It is some structural and fundamental decision we were taking by a visionary person in the early 60s. It was the King Hassan II when he just took over. He decided three major things. First, we were the only country in the world, but especially in our region, to make the one-party system forbidden by constitution. It is something which was already a fantastic vision and a very, very smart, courageous decision, because at that time, you remember maybe for some of you, it was Nasser, it was Bandung, it was all this kind of situation all over the world. And no way for a country like Morocco, just coming back to freedom after the French mandate, to pretend to be like a Western country in a system of plurality. The king understood that at that time, and he make out of law the one-party system, and he saved us. Because if it was the contrary, I will not be with you this evening, and Morocco will not be the country, will not be the country that I am just trying to discuss with you. Second decision, he decided to have a market-free economy in the country. At the time where all around it was a state, they were state economy, state-owned economy, planified economy, collective economy. The king said no. This country will have a different system and a market economy, a business-minded country. And he saved us also because of that. And the third decision at that time, more than close to 60 years ago, he decided to base his international politics and relation on strong relation with the Western world. At that time, all around, the same country we decided to have one-party system, to have a state economy, were developing relation with the USSR, with Cuba, with China, at that time. We, Moroccans, and thanks to the king and his vision, we decided to have strong partnership with European Union, with America, and with the whole Western world. And it saved us. It saved us. And when you put in a global perspective these three decisions, it explained why Morocco is different today. Because all around, again, there were dictatorship, one-party system, one way to think, one way to speak, no plurality, no diversity. So we are in a permanent mood and culture of reforming things. Reforming is something which is in our ADN, in our genes. It's not something which we have to impose. People accept it. I'm not saying that we are a country with no problem. We have so many challenges to feed and to answer. And I'm not saying that we didn't have problems, failures. We do have it. And we have still so many things to maybe improve socially, create more jobs, improve justice, try to reform the health sector, education. And we are working on it. We are a poor country. Morocco is not a rich country. We are rich by this kind of enlightened leadership and by our human resources. But we have no oil. We don't have something which is really make us as a leader, an economic leader in the country. But, again, we have our legacy, we have our heritage, and we have our own way to be part of the world community. And we are sharing the same values than all of you, speaking about human rights, speaking about plurality and freedom of speech. You know, I feel at home when I am in San Francisco, because I have exactly the same culture. I have exactly the same ambition. I have exactly the same needs and expectation. And I have also the same commitments. And being in San Francisco reminds me that, I mean, California was the first country more than 100 years ago to give to the women the right of voting. And it tells me a lot, because in my country, and very recently, the status of the woman was changed. In fact, our women are voting in Morocco for a very long time, but we are improving the situation of the women in my country permanently. But the change was decided just 3 years ago was a major, major break. We have changed also the family code at the same time to try to, again, be coherent. And be, I mean by coherence, if we pretend to be part of the world community in this vision of freedom and plurality, we have also to amend and to reform our system, our institution. So let me end by insisting and telling you that we have voted a new constitution in July 2011, because we are a constitutional monarchy for close to 60 years. But nobody knows. They said, well, we have a king. You have an executive king. What does it mean? Well, our king, I mean, he knows the limit of its power by constitution. And the constitution is telling him from where it started and where it ends. And it's new. But more than that, our constitution is also, if I may say, a peaceful and such a modern revolution. Because in the foreword of this new constitution, which was voted in July 2011, it is said, it is written, and again, it makes me so proud of my country and of my community. It is said that Morocco, by today, an Arab and a Muslim country, was first nursed and forged and built historically by Judaism, by the Amazigh, the Berbers, by the African Hassani. And it is in the Constitution, and it is now, and it is from the Arab world, and it is from Islam, the Muslim country, just to try to convince you to resist the temptation to read Islam or to understand what is the Arab world as black and white. It is complex, it is diverse, and it is also modernity, humanity, and very convivial, I can tell you. Visit Morocco, you will see. Thank you.
Our thanks to Andre Azoulay, Senior Advisor to His Majesty King Mohammed VI of Morocco. We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program of the Commonwealth Club of California, Reform in Morocco, Evolution, not Revolution. We will now welcome audience questions here at the microphone.
I have two questions. Have you written a book?
Excuse me?
Have you written a book?
No.
I highly recommend it. And two, would you please take a message to Morocco, or at least to your king? I promised my mother that if ever I met a Dane, I would thank them for saving the Jews in World War II. And in Morocco, not one Jew was taken by the Germans, and the King of Morocco refused to give them up. So if you would please do that. Thank you.
Thank you, madam.
Good evening. Thank you so much for coming tonight and speaking to us. I have a question. What are your major industries, and how do you see Morocco with what's going on financially with the European Union and America?
Do you have to answer? I answer now, or
as you like.
I can do it that way. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Well, first of all, madam, I don't know where you are.
Here I am.
No, but yeah. Yes, thank you, because you remind me about this also part of the Moroccan exception when during the Holocaust and during the Nazi period, and when this tragedy was European, the very rare signals of humanity and compassion were coming from Muslim country and Arab countries. And by this time, it's very important to keep this souvenir alive. The King Mohammed V, effectively, he welcomed thousands of Moroccan, of European Jewish person. We were fleeing from Europe from the very early 30s, before Hitler took over. But during the Holocaust period, we were at that time under the French mandate, and it was the Vichy government. And the Vichy government want to implement in Morocco the accelerate laws. I mean, it was implemented in France at that time. And he came to the King of Morocco asking him the list of the Moroccan Jew. And the King answered to put, you know, the yellow star on them. And the King said, we in Morocco, I don't have Jewish person. I have citizens. It happens that they are Muslims or Jewish. But if you want to put on them the yellow star, come to my office tomorrow with 12 or 15, I don't know, stars, yellow stars, I will start with my family. You will start with my family. So they will never come back to him, but, you know, it's very dear to my heart again to remind you with this period, because again, from that time, we were sending to the rest of the world this signal of modernity, and it was a Moroccan signal. Madam, regarding our relations with European Union and the financial economic situation in Morocco, first of all, you have to know that the European Union is number one everywhere in Morocco. First client, first provider, first investor, and you know, all these those flows, I mean, from finance to culture, from science to social relations, the Europeans are number one everywhere. And it was a partnership we built together. We have what in French it's called the statut avancé. So we are the most advanced Mediterranean, I mean, southern Mediterranean country in terms of you know, proximity and deepness of our cooperation with Europe. In fact, if we are not, by the Rome Treaty, eligible to be a full member of the European Union, the reality is like we are exactly, I mean, like a European country. And it is amazing, because Morocco, as I said, is an Arab country, is in the Middle East, is in North Africa. We are also an African country, but we are Europe, as you know. Europe is less than 15 kilometers from Morocco, and the Straits of Gibraltar are just an archaeological or in geological accident. So it means that we are enjoying and we are trying to leverage all those dimensions, all those facets, all those you know, parameters. Who are, I mean, the pillars of the Moroccan nation and Moroccan identity. So Morocco is doing well in terms of economy. Morocco is doing well, and we never have, I mean, a break in our growth for the last 20 years. I mean, we are growing that way with a curve with following this, not like this, but not like this. It's not up and down. It's, you know, a slow growth, but a durable one.
Thank you. My name is Iftikhar Hai. I am from India originally. Like 60 years ago when India got independent, we established, you know, computer technical universities all over. And that's why today in the Silicon Valley there are 40% computer engineers coming from India. Now, does Morocco has that kind of a base? And if not, I would like to speak to you so we can establish some offices over there. One thing. Second question is, does Morocco recognize the state of Israel?
Thank you, sir. Well, I will let my very dear friend Kamal Oudriri, who is one of the scientists of the NASA, to tell you what does it mean, being a Moroccan, you know, as you said, expert doctor or so gifted person. He is one of the most talented scientists at the NASA, at the Caltech, coming from Caltech. But nevertheless, if you want to come to Morocco to help us, as you said, and to try to, you are more than welcome, because the Indian experience and what you mentioned is fascinating, and we know about it, and we are trying to follow your path. But, you know, Morocco is not India. And regarding Israel, no. No for the time being, because a few years ago, the Israeli flag was, you know, yeah, And the Israeli flag, was in Rabat, and the Moroccan flag was also in Tel Aviv. It was during the period where we were so many to believe that peace was finally coming between Palestine and Israel. And you know how many rendezvous we missed, how many opportunities were spoiled. And you have to know that Morocco, again, was a pioneer country. At the request of the Palestinian people, we started to work on the peace process from the early 60s, long time before all the negotiation we know. And the King Hassan II was a key player to make it possible. All the peace process we were negotiated with Egypt or with the Palestinian and other countries started to be designed in Morocco. And Henry Kissinger was saying in many of his books that when it came for him to visit the Middle East or to try to work on the peace process, he always started his tour by Rabat and by asking the King Hassan II his advice, his evaluation, and his orientation. And I'm not saying that because I'm a Moroccan Jew. I am a peace activist and a peace fighter for the Palestinian for a very long time. I decided to do it by myself, not to please the Palestinian, but just to keep alive my Jewishness. I don't see my Jewishness in safety and in coherence with the way my rabbis and my teachers in Essaouira teach me.
What's his name, your teacher, Essaouira?
You know it?
I'm from Essaouira.
Oh, I'm so happy that I have some. Thank you.
It's surprising in San Francisco to find someone from your own town, your own, almost your own age. Even your parents and you and all your family in Essaouira, my younger age.
Oh, I'm so moved. By the fact that you are in this room this evening. Thank you. Thank you so much. We'll have the opportunity. I will tell you about my teachers and my rabbis. But the way I was educated as a Jewish person make me, very quickly and at my very young age, trying to give a chance to the Palestinian people to retake over of their freedom, of their dignity, of their justice, and to live side by side with the State of Israel, and enjoying the same situation in terms of justice than all the countries. And I hope that one day, again, the Israelis will have an office in Morocco, and Morocco will have an office in Tel Aviv as soon as the Palestinian state will retake over of its rights, very legitimate rights. Madam.
Assalamu alaikum. Shukran, Sidi. I had the privilege of serving in the Peace Corps in Morocco for two years, and I lived down south in Tata in a Tamazight village. And I was a teacher in a Darshabem, and I know working on education with a lot of students in rural places, it's very challenging because many of them speak the Amazigh, but in school they're being taught French and Darija. And I'm happy to hear in the changes of the Constitution the actual recognition of the Amazigh. And I'm wondering what that means in terms of reviving the language or encouraging the language within the school system.
It means a lot. Mm-hmm. It means a lot. We have now, as you probably know, for instance, TV
channel.
Channel in Amazigh and in Berber. And we have also, change the education program and the education book by having, let's say, more and better, I mean, reference to this Berber civilization and to this part of Morocco, which is more than half of Morocco, as you know. I think that we are in the process and in a dynamic where we will go further and we'll do more. But we are doing it as for all the, as I mentioned, for many reforms, gradually. We want to make it stable, and we want to make it by having a strong consensus, not by taking just a decision, a radical one, and the day after to be in a situation of reconsidering what was decided. So it's gradual, but I have no doubt that it will go the right direction and give to the Amazigh people what they legitimacy in terms of recognition of all their culture and specificities. I have no doubt. And being probably myself Berber, I appreciate what you said.
Hi, my question is also education related, which is there's a man named Hans Rosling, who's a Swedish demographer, who he's given several very famous TED Talks. And one of them is that he describes about when you educate the girl child, how it changes the entire economy of not only her life and her future, but of her family's, her immediate family, and then her village, and like that. So I was wondering, in all that you've seen in the last 20 years and in Morocco, and boy, has things have been moving quickly, what is happening with education of women in Morocco? Because you have such a unique role in the Arab world, North Africa, Africa, European, you're sort of the middle of all of the transitions coming. So I'm wondering, how are you approaching the opportunity to teach girls in Morocco to hope their economic future is different?
Yeah, first of all, you have to know that women are central in our society. We are a matriarchal society, by tradition, by culture. And there are so many things to do still, even if we improved the situation, in terms of education, in terms of parity, and accessibility of women to everything, everywhere. You have to know, for instance, that in the financial and the banking business, 37% of the employees and the management are women in Morocco. It was not the case just 20 years ago. But there are still many challenges. And we were not as good as we expected for many of us to be. Education is not the most successful story in Morocco. And we are responsible for this failure. Not failure, but for this problem, if I may say. We can do better, we can do differently. And we still don't have the receipt or the understanding of the ability to really change the situation. And tonight, I'm not able to tell you that it will be different tomorrow. We are still working on it. Not easy, but we were wrong in many decisions in that sector. I'm clear on that point. And I think that we have first to understand why we have been so successful in so many fields, but in this one, which is vital, which is central, we were not as good as we were somewhere else. But we have to know why first, and then move forward.
Thank you so much for coming. I was wondering if you could talk about your neighbor Molly and maybe what we can be doing here for Molly and maybe your views of what Morocco might be doing.
Mali?
Mali, the country of Mali.
Well, Morocco is doing nothing, first of all. I mean, it's not, we are not concerned by this, directly by this situation. We are following very carefully because it's not as far as you can imagine from our borders. And where Islam again is at stake in this region. And we are trying to help. We are trying to help to try to spread in the region a different culture of Islam, a different understanding of Islam. We are trying also to put in a perspective an alternative to those, to the theories who were spread for such a long time in the region, and where Islam now is instrumentalized, and you have this kind of, you know, very strange links between, I mean, the drug dealers, the religious Salafist organization, the terrorists. But I personally don't identify it to Islam, like, unfortunately, many analysts or commentators are saying. I mean, you remember what happens in Algeria just a few weeks ago when this, you know, hostage, those hostages were killed. And in the whole world, you have heard Islamist, which means Islam, not terrorist, not extremist. And I remember that I was saying at UCLA that if they were Jews, what, I mean, we'll say that at that time, Judaist or I don't know why. Why Islamist? Why, you know, stigmatizing for billions of readers or watching or people watching the TVs all over the world, Islam, 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 Islam. In fact, we are confronted in Mali to a kind of mafias who are using religion again or Islam to for purposes or means that has nothing to do with the religion. So I hope that the situation will be stabilized. It will take time. I mean, the French intervention will not just solve the problem in a very short term. We are in a long process. But I have no doubt that at the end, I mean, the real Islam will prevail.
Good evening, sir. Thank you for coming. I had a question related to language as well and education. So you talked about the Amazigh language and teaching it, but first we forget that another principal language in Morocco is the Darija, or the Moroccan dialect.
Is?
Darija.
Darija, oui.
And I was wondering, I'm Moroccan, that's why.
Oh, good. Welcome. So and I'm happy that you're here tonight.
And I was wondering, to your view, what importance can have Darija in an official context today in Morocco? And my second question is, since the education in Morocco has been Arabized, or it's all in Arabic today since the 80s, I think, what language can we teach, or do we think of a reform of the teaching language that can make the Moroccan student more involved in the process of globalization, like teaching English or French, for example? Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to you. We can, again, you are absolutely right to refer to Darija. Darija is our dialect or our language, and the classic Arabic, which came later, is a different story. So Darija is our roots, our language, our heritage, and our legacy. And I hope that something will happen to make it again as our language, not to be substitute to Arabic. Arabic is a national language, and we need it. But by needing it, it doesn't mean that we have just to eradicate and to forget and to put aside the Darija, which is, I mean, emotion, which is so deeply rooted in our minds and in our hearts. So we are few, but it's, you know, more and more people are joining this trend, fighting for having Darija coming back. And there are good signals. But as you know, the largest majority of Moroccans, they speak in Darija. They want Darija, and especially when it comes to emotion, it's first Darija, not another language. Regarding English, I mean, we have now one university which is English speaking, north of Morocco, the Ahawain University, which was created 14 years ago and doing very well. Two new universities, International University in Rabat and in Gaza, are also English speaking. We have American University, private one, in Casablanca also and in Rabat. So you have more and more English yes, teaching and Moroccan English speaking. There were very few. Now you have millions. So it's improving and it will be larger and probably will have English in the education, I mean the primaries and the secondaries education, will have probably English coming also. Now you have Arabic, you have French, Spanish, you know, you have close to 8 million Moroccan people Spanish speaking. It's history. It's history and it's also a legacy. So we have to put in the map English at the right place. It's coming. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Privileged to have the last question. No pressure at all. I too was a Peace Corps volunteer in Morocco. I lived in the south in the Erishidia province, not far from Rzouga. And not too long ago, I actually wrote a graduate thesis on social entrepreneurship in North Africa. So I have a particular interest in this question. Given what you spoke about with the Arab awakening, the Arab Spring, and how obviously it's affecting North Africa, it's affecting the Middle East, it's affecting the entire world, but how Morocco is different in that you spoke about the market there being free, it being separate from the government, unlike many of the other countries that have been affected by the Arab awakening. And as you know, there's a large amount of, I guess you would call it revolutionary ambition that has arisen from the uprisings. I'm wondering how you see that affecting the future of Morocco
in
the next
Morocco?
Few years. Yeah.
You mean revolutionary?
Yeah. The ambition that is felt by all of the young people throughout the country, throughout the whole region, after watching these immense uprisings and the results that have come out of them, there have been immense impacts as far as social entrepreneurship, social investments, addressing those problems that led to the Arab Spring to begin with. So my question is how you see all of this ambition affecting Morocco, a country that doesn't have such strong ties between the government and the local economy that might allow for more opportunity in that area.
Yeah. For how long have you been to Morocco?
Amenunus.
So it's not enough.
Yeah.
It's not enough. I invite you to come to stay more.
Okay.
But
inshallah.
Okay. Yes. No, I have a different evaluation and understanding of my country. And I want to tell you that, I mean, probably more than ever, the national consensus today is strong, is deep. And it's true that we are following all what is going on around. And you have been in Morocco, that you know that there is, you know, free press, free debate, mm-hmm. civil society with NGOs everywhere. And if the situation was or is like you describe it, I will not be in a position to tell you why and how my country is changing, reforming, without violence. They can be, I mean, you can have. Have you been, I mean, sometimes from Rashidiya, have you been to Rabat?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Have you been to the demonstration in Rabat?
To where in Rabat?
Yeah.
Not inside of it.
Not inside of it. It's a surprise, because if you were in Rabat, you could have seen every day, in front of my office, in front of the parliament, people demonstrating.
I did see that.
Okay.
I definitely saw that.
Okay, so you have to mention it.
It was hard to avoid that.
Yeah, you have to mention it, because it's part of the answer to your question.
Right.
So we have rules. We have rules of law. Mm-hmm. And we have a system. We have an institution. We are not a newcomer, as I said in the beginning. So we have the capacity to listen to our people, and we have the ability to provide answers, which didn't mean that, again, we are doing miracles. We still need to create more jobs. We still need to change education. We still need to improve justice. We still need to have a different health system. Definitely. And we are working on it. And there is a dynamic for improving it. But maybe I missed something. In my country, you have seen yourself during your 2 years and a half by having the feeling that there is a revolution cooking somewhere.
Why?
I don't see it that way. I mean, we are not here to debate. You gave your sentiment. I'm giving you my. I don't see it. I don't see it really. I see a real, I mean, dynamic activity, request, demonstration, critics, and it's part of the game. But there are rules in the game.
Sure. I was speaking mainly regarding just social entrepreneurship.
Yeah, social entrepreneurship is improving. You know that the middle class today in Morocco is close to, I mean, this middle entrepreneurs or small entrepreneurs, more than 500,000. 30 years ago, maybe 10,000, 15. It's not enough, but it exists again. So we have to do better, we have to do more, we have to quick the process, we have to make it maybe more creative, I don't know how. And we are in this dynamic. But again, no majestic for providing the right answer and the full answer tomorrow morning. But I have the certitude that after tomorrow, something will happen.
Our strong thanks to His Excellency Andre Azoulay, Senior Advisor to His Majesty King Mohammed VI of Morocco, for his very informative talk this evening. We also thank our audience here and our listening audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California in its 110th year of enlightened discussion is adjourned.